From Beijing to Berlin, from Singapore to South Carolina, from Cape Town to Canada, the world turns on business and commerce. And where there is such industry, disagreements are bound to happen. Sometimes these disagreements are resolved. For the rest of the time, they end up in the capable hands of professionals around the world. The dynamic and interesting stories of these individuals is what you will hear on this show, Tales of the Tribunal. Welcome back to Tales of the Tribunal. I am none other than your host, Chris Campbell, your guide on this weekly deep dive into the world of international dispute resolution. Thank you for joining us yet again today. Now, if I sound just a bit more English, that's because I am here in London, England, doing some interviews, getting some work done, most importantly, enjoying the city. But without further ado, why don't we get into today's show? So, as I've mentioned on the past episodes, there is an exciting event coming up next week featuring yours truly among many other talented professionals in the world of international dispute resolution. It is hosted by the AIJA, and it's the 11th annual conference. It's being hosted in Zurich. It is an event we've talked about a number of times now, and I will be serving on a panel along with Alina Liepianu of the ICC in Paris, Ewelina Wetris of K&O Gates in Poland, on the topic of, has arbitration become too expensive? Now, that's things that you should know if you've been listening to previous episodes. Yes, this is a quick pop quiz of sorts, but there are other topics as well, and let's take an opportunity to look at those just now. Another panel will be Faster, Higher, and Stronger, Shaping Efficient Procedures in Arbitration. There'll be a workshop on client perspectives, another workshop on efficiency and from a counsel's perspective. And that's just the first day. The next day, they'll also talk about conversations about who foots the bill for separate deposit security costs and allocation of costs, as well as a number of social events as well. So what I'm trying to say is, ultimately, this is going to be a great event. You still have time to register. Of course, I'm sure travel plans are getting a little bit shorter, getting tight at this point. But if you haven't and you have the opportunity, joining us in Zurich would be a fantastic opportunity to not only network with other folks in the field of international dispute resolution, but also to get a great deal of information yourself. Beyond that, why don't we talk about today's guest? Today's guest I have known for the past several years during my work with the Moot Alumni Association, and she is none other than the president of the Moot Alumni Association herself, Ms. Sherlyn Tung. Sherlyn's episode gets into some really interesting topics and pearls of wisdom about mentoring, about how to balance your work and your work-life balance. Organizations that are ideal to join for not only just young practitioners, but folks looking to get more active in the world of international dispute resolution itself. And the real bonus, the real reason that you should be tuning in and listening to the entire episode is I even speak literally one sentence of Spanish. So if that's what you're here for, to hear Chris Campbell speak Spanish, absolutely listen to the rest of this episode. I'm joking, of course. One further thing I should note. Unfortunately, in law school and in most legal training courses, they do not teach you how to become a sound engineer. Why do I mention this? So here is a pearl of wisdom or a peek behind the curtain. So this episode with Sherlyn is the first episode of Tales of the Tribunal that was recorded chronologically. So we were still figuring out some bugs, figuring out how this whole process works to make this magic happen that we bring to you on a weekly basis. What does that mean? It means that, unfortunately, the first minute and a half, 2 minutes of the interview with Sherlyn have unfortunately been lost to a corrupted file, to no fault of Sherlyn's, and she was most understanding about it. But unfortunately, it will start with me asking her to rewind a bit to a little bit to cover more of her introduction. So that is the best way that we could salvage this interview. And I think it is a great conversation nonetheless. But please understand and I beg your indulgence as we get to that. Before we get into the show, I'd like to mention one more thing that we've talked about and something that is quickly running out of time for you to register for. In fact, this week and next week are the last 2 weeks to do so. June 30th is the cutoff date. But something new in the world of dispute resolution. There's a unique opportunity and new program going on in Vienna, Austria, hosted by the International Disputes Professional Academy, aka the Negotiation Academy for short, focusing on negotiation, mediation, and dispute management skills. Now, these are all things that are critically important for any stage of your career as an international dispute resolution professional. It's being headed up, again, by the Negotiation Academy, and in particular, Ms. Claudia Winkler. The event goes on from July 11th to July 16th. I will be there. So if you will be there, dear listeners, if you decide to register and show up, or maybe it's even one reason why you would show up, I would love to meet you, and I'd love to see you there and hear your thoughts on the show and hopefully get some fantastic experiences and hear your own stories. So all of those things and more to be seen at the Negotiation Academy's training from July 11th to July 16th. Oh, plot twist. Claudia Winkler is going to be the guest on next week's show. So say if you are, you know, skipping around through the episodes of Tales of the Tribunal, I don't know why you would, but next week's episode will feature the person putting up this whole event, Miss Claudia Winkler. So if you would tune in for next week's episode and register for the show, that would be great for not only you, but also for this show as well. So without further ado, let's get into it. It is time for the next episode of Tales of the Tribunal. Stick around for show notes at the end. See you on the other side.
From what site?
Okay, so humble beginnings, really, you know.
I try.
That's right. So you did that. You started off in California, then got involved with the Visa Moot, and that kind of started you down this road of international arbitration.
Exactly. I think I literally did the VIS, went to Stockholm, and stayed in arbitration ever since.
Ever since, okay.
Ever since.
And so, specifically, where are you now?
I am now with CMS Hasha Ziegler in Hong Kong. CMS Hasha Ziegler is a the fifth largest firm in the world. We are part of the German entity, and we set up shop in Hong Kong to try to get business from basically mainland China and the West, because arbitration in Asia has been flourishing the last decade or so.
Well, sure. And I mean, so how long have you guys been in China?
CMS first opened its doors in the fall of 2016 with two people. And now the disputes team has more than, I don't know, quintupled, whatever. I'm not very good at math.
Not very good at math.
Our office started with two, and the entire CMS firm in Hong Kong now has about 70.
Now, how did you get there? What made you want to go to CMS?
Well, it was a very great opportunity. I was the team that I work with is quite international, and actually, I would say 90% are Visa Moot alumni.
Really? 90%?
Yeah.
Okay.
I work with, the managing partner, Nicholas Vigan, is not a Mooty, but he's a big supporter. Whereas the other partner, Marielle Dimsey, is a Mooty, and she actually competed in the eighth Moot. We also have Tom Prosler, who was a Mooty. He's going to kill me. I don't remember.
Oh, sure. No, Tom.
You know Tom, yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
We shared an office for a little bit. That was amazing. I have two junior associates there who are also Vis Mooties. Alex Yi from Chinese U, and Sanjana Pramod from one of the Indian schools, one of the better ones.
Okay, fair enough. You know, no need to give a shout out to whatever random school.
She'll correct me. It's okay.
Well, that's right. I'm sure if she's listening, she'll send us an email, either myself and you, probably both. Okay. So then, to the extent you can talk about it, what are some of the things that you're working on right now, either related directly to work or just kind of extracurricular in the international arbitration space?
Well, so we do have one public case, one case that's under ICSID, so that we can discuss. We represent the government of Armenia against a dual U.S. Armenian citizen in the ICSID case. So that's pretty interesting, although I only have a very, very small supporting role because I am mainly commercial arbitration. I'm on three other international disputes that are currently pending involving Chinese parties and Western counterparts. We defend the Chinese party in one. We defend we represent the Western counterparts in two others. And they are basically, there's an ICC arbitration, HKIC arbitration, and ICDR.
Okay. Now, you mentioned it's investment arbitration versus commercial arbitration. For listeners at home, they may not know the difference. What's the difference between those two things?
I personally think commercial arbitration is a lot more fun and interesting.
Oh, no.
But a lot of people will correct me. I'm probably just not smart enough to get the little nuances in investment arbitration. But basically, investment arbitration has to deal with government entities. So it's a matter of more, I would say, public law. So you have a lot more repercussions. It always involves a government that's being sued and an investor who believes that its right has been violated.
Sure. So you heard it here first, folks. Sherilyn Tung prefers commercial arbitration over investment arbitration and may or may not think that investment arbitration might be a little bit boring.
Or I'm just not smart enough. But to give my firm a little push, actually, we have one of the top investment teams in the world. We have Klaus Sachs, who hopefully anyone in arbitration in the world knows them. Mariel heads our investment arbitration with Nicholas, and they're both experts. So it's great. I wish I could have the opportunity to work with them more on that, but unfortunately my intelligence level, I think, keeps me to commercial.
Okay, fair enough. Well, what about outside of work? What are you doing outside of the office, particularly in the world of international dispute resolution?
Does that exist?
Does that exist? Fair enough. That's the right answer. That's the model answer for, I'm sure your boss is listening. That's exactly what they want to hear.
No, but the top thing is the Moot Alumni Association, how I got to meet you.
Fantastic. Yes. So I stumbled into the Moot Alumni Association, and Sherlyn has been my guide. But Sherlyn, you know, how did you get involved with the Moot Alumni Association? I mean, obviously you did the Moot, but how did you get more involved and then now to your executive position with the organization now?
I think what it is, so the Moot actually means a lot to me because it took me out of this miserable world of construction defect and civil litigation, which was what I was doing when I was in law school and what I was slated to do at the firm. And it brought me into this world of like international people from all over, including the Chinese and the Taiwanese. You never really, you always think that you're going to have the opportunity to work with people from like your same backgrounds. But once you kind of get stuck into a firm, you're in a firm. And also, so what it is I really wanted to give a way to give back to the community, to the students, because I think you and I would understand because we're Americans and it's quite difficult in law school. Like even if you're top 10%, even if you're from some of the best law schools in the US, you might not still get a job that you like, right? And I found the world of arbitration something really interesting, and I wanted to be able to give back to the students. Also bring in more professionals, bring in more academics, and just find a way to kind of have both worlds meet. And so I met Arno Eisen, who was president at the time, who brought me in.
Sure.
Started running some of the conferences and helping out with a little bit of the events. And as time evolved and people got older and left, I moved on to the board.
You moved on to the board.
Yes.
And so tell us some about what's going on in the MAA. I mean, what's coming up next? I mean, for Mooties that are listening right now.
The Mooties. All of you better have already signed up for the Moot Alumni Association. I mean, we offer a bunch of different
How do they things. Do that? How do they sign up?
They need to go on our website that's going to be wonderfully revamped and fixed very soon, and they could sign up there. It's two different types of membership for the time being. You can be a free member, or you can have a paid membership where you get access to the Vindobona Journal, which is one of the top publications in the world. What else does the MAA do? What do? We connect over 5,000 people on social media, on emails. We're going to have a wonderful global map that's going to be up and running where you're going to see people and where they are in the world today. By people, I mean, obviously, the Mooties and arbitrators. We have a China project where we're going to implement legal training sessions on arbitration and commercial trade law for young professionals in China because they just don't have the same resources. If the China project works out well and if we have the resources, we would like to expand to other regions.
Well, sure, you're seeing an explosion of arbitration in China. And I would imagine with the rise of the Belt and Road Initiative and this focus of the Chinese government on trying to make it more attractive to international users, is that something the MAA plans to tap into, or?
The MAA, we'll take a look into that. I know for my extracurricular with CMS, we do have a big project or conference, series of conferences on the Belt and Road. The MAA, we do have a panel on the Belt and Road in Hong Kong. To be quite honest, we think that topic has been played out a little bit. So we are trying to aim towards the legal trainings to help the lawyers or students be able to exercise their skills and use them in the one day when the construction disputes emerge.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's $5.7 trillion worth of being played out. I'd imagine there's been a lot of conversation about it.
Yeah.
But that sounds great. The MAA sounds like it has some good things coming down the pipeline.
Oh, I also have to include the MAA gets a complimentary. What is it? You should help me out here. Something observer status.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And it's very difficult to get in, so you get to go to New York and Vienna.
You get to go to New York and Vienna. Yes, it is a fantastic program. I took part in that program 4 years ago in New York and was part of the working group on e-commerce. Mm. And so got to be technically you can say a UN delegate. So that is a very cool thing to put on your resume, and you can send that home, write a letter to your mom, and she'll love you, put it on the fridge.
Exactly.
So, okay. So how about things outside of
International Arbitration Dispute Resolution, MAA. Are there things that exist outside of those things that you fill your time with?
I like to eat. I'm a big foodie. Very well in Asia. What else do I like to do? I have to be honest, I like to relax, read some books, watch TV, not use my brain for memorials or legal research sometimes. Travel. I really like to travel.
Well, so those are some interesting things. And actually shifting, that's a perfect segue, Sherilyn, into some of these other things and taking a look at life outside of work. So what are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? You know, it's the Trump book, actually.
The Trump book. Oh.
The one that came out. I haven't been able to really get into it, but I have it, and it's in my luggage because I want to read it.
All right. So reading some Trump literature, always a good choice.
Yeah, right.
So The Art of the Deal.
No, is it that one? It's the one where he's like this, you know?
Where he's pointing. Okay, so for those, because we're on an audio only experience,
where
you
he's
know.
Pointing.
Sherilyn was pointing very aggressively just now. So you're reading the Trump book where he is pointing at something.
It's the one where that gentleman was, he must have been an interviewer or a publicist or something that interviewed Trump and was there and put everything in the book, good and the bad.
Sure. So, and so you haven't started it yet, or you're just.
Start at page one.
You're page one. Okay. Well, so we'll stand by for an update to see how that is going. What were you reading before that?
Memos.
Sure.
Yeah. Legal stuff.
Legal stuff. Okay. Well, and you mentioned TV shows. What are you watching?
Oh my gosh. TV, Netflix. I had just discovered Gracie and Frank. That's amazing.
Gracie and Frank. What is that?
Was it Frankie and Grace? Might have been Frankie and Grace.
I heard of Will and Grace. I don't know about Frankie.
No. This is the one with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlinson.
Okay.
Tomlinson. What is the gentleman's name? Michael Douglas's father. No, not him. Charlie Sheen's father.
Okay. And what's going on in the show?
Basically, so you have these two married couples that have been married for like 40 or 50 years, and the husbands work together at the law firm. And the wives tolerate each other because they have to, because one's like a total, what do you call this from the 70s?
Hippie.
It's
an archaic term.
Yeah, then you have Jane Fonda. But then they discover on their retirement that the husbands are gay and have been gay for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And we're leaving them to be with each other. It's a really good show.
Plot twist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, so even in your extracurricular time, you're watching TV shows about law and lawyers.
That's so fun. I focus on Jane Fonda.
Yeah, I used to love the show Suits with Harvey Specter and Mike Ross. And
I liked that show until I realized that life is nothing like that in a law firm.
Yeah, disclaimer alert. Yes, absolutely. Do not engage in the unauthorized practice of law.
Totally that is tricked. My goodness.
Yes.
One Day at a Time is really good. Unfortunately, it was canceled.
I know. That is. I like that show as well.
Fuller House, because it brings me back to my younger days.
Sorry. Yeah, but, you know, Aunt Becky's out here bribing people to get into college, though.
What in the world?
But shifting focus just a little bit. As you mentioned, working can oftentimes consume a lot of your life. It can become how you spend the majority of the hours in your day.
Mm.
So the question I have for you, Sherilyn, is, you know, do you do anything? Do you do any sports or any exercise in particular? Or do you do like yoga or meditation to kind of help balance out your mental or physical health in these long hours?
I try to go to the gym as often as I can. I have to be honest with the schedule. I get there once a week if I'm lucky.
Sure.
But I also find walks outside because I'm based in Hong Kong. So during the day, during most of the year, it's ridiculously hot and humid. So I like to go out and take a walk in the evening. What else do I do? I can't do yoga. I fall asleep because I'm so tired. Music.
Yeah, sure. Oh, okay. So what kind of music?
Britney Spears and pop. I love pop.
Okay. And so for folks that are in a similarly situated position, what are some things that you would recommend that they do in order to kind of get their mind off work or to stay active?
Actually, leave the office. I know it's hard. Everybody in the law firm is trying to bill hours and trying to make sure they meet their target, but you need to just leave sometimes. When you leave, don't look at your phone.
Okay, so disconnect a little bit.
Just disconnect from the world. Go to a really amazing hole in the wall and have delicious food.
Right, sure. But what if clients need to reach you while you're having your delicious food in the hole in the wall?
That is a bit of a down. I know. And that's the thing. A lot of law firms have these requirements that you have to respond to a client within an hour. And even if it's just to say, I'm in a meeting. I'm very fortunate we don't have that requirement. CMS is quite flexible. But for those of you that do, you know, you got to take a look at your life. If you don't think it's worthwhile, or if you're tired, overworked, you just need to take a look and see what makes you happy.
Sure. Okay. And so how about on the weekends? Do you try and make it a point to disconnect some on the weekends, or is that kind of a myth? Is that a fantasy?
That's definitely a myth. That phone, I am constantly looking at it, and my husband can tell you how annoying it is. But it being in China or being in Hong Kong, I can go to spas and at least relax for a very decent price and a very beautiful oasis. And that's what I like to do.
Sure. And so as we finish up and get ready to head towards the conclusion of this discussion, the question I have for you, Sherilyn, is, so a young graduate or maybe a relatively newer practicing attorney decides they want to go into the world of international dispute resolution. And they come to you and they say, Sherilyn, how do I break into this field? What is the advice you would give them?
Be flexible. Now,
like yoga. You mean yoga?
I wish. No, definitely not yoga, but flexibility. Some people are stuck in wanting to live in the city that they live in, but they don't realize that arbitration is just not big in that city. You have to be able to be flexible, to be willing to move to a hub that has it, because that's one way to break in. If there's nothing where you live, there's no way breaking.
And what are some of the hubs?
Well, in the U.S., I would say mostly New York, D.C., Florida, so Miami. Texas actually has a very strong oil and gas arbitration. King and Spalding is based there or started there. California is getting better ever since that the legislature overturned the requirement that you had to be barred. So, or the state bar overturned it. So now I would say LA and San Francisco are big hubs. We have a really big name in California, former Ambassador David Huebner. He's great. And he's there in LA and he's very big on helping students or young professionals.
Sure. And so you said mentioned being there is certainly a huge component, but you know, say you're a law student right now, you're going into your second year if you're in the United States and thinking about your 3L year, or maybe if you're elsewhere in the world, you have a little bit of time. Is there anything you can be doing while you're in school?
Networking, get your name out there, write articles, get your articles published, reach out. I mean, if people who are at the VISMA, you will meet thousands of arbitrators, follow up with them. Your colleagues, your former friends, these Moody's will be partners in firms one day. Follow up with them. Keep in touch.
But Sherilyn, that can be very intimidating. I mean, how do you, you know, go from being a Moody or just being a student and saying, oh, I'm going to, you know, email Vandenberg or somebody, some other big name arbitrator that happens to you run into in Vienna. You know, how do you do that sort of thing?
You just have to do it and you would be amazed. I worked for Pierre Carrère, one of the leading arbitrators, particularly in Switzerland. And when I worked with him, he loved getting emails or notes from students. And it always put a smile on his face. And he was always willing to write back and also give a lending hand. I mean, you are definitely very scared when you see these figures, but you'd also be surprised because remember, they were where you were one day.
That's true. Are there any organizations you would recommend to join either while you're in school or just starting out your practice?
Well, so again, the Mood Alumni Association.
Sure, of
definitely
course.
Definitely join that.
Right.
But for the youngsters, you should join the younger division of all of the different institutions. So you have YIAG for the LCIA. You have ICC YAF. You have Young Singapore International Arbitration Center, HK45, which is for the HKIAC. Join all of these groups because guess what? A lot of partners are also under 40 and you will be in the same group with them. They also like to set up mentor mentees. Mm. So that's just one way of breaking in.
Okay. And speaking on that topic, if you allow me to ask, who have been some of the mentors or some of the influential figures international arbitration for you?
Pierre Cadet was the one, actually, let me go back one step. Dr. Patricia Shaughnessy, my professor at Stockholm, was the first one in my arbitration career. She pushed me and she supported me 24/7 and still does this day. And she always finds opportunities, not only for me, but for any of her students. And she's there to kind of work you through. And she taught us the basics of arbitration. So she would be the first. Next is Pierre Cadet, who was amazing, patient, most of the time, and literally put me from the beginning of an arbitration to the end as a tribunal secretary, was always there to answer questions and took me to all of his hearings and everything just so I could get a good experience. And even to this day is my biggest supporter.
Sure. And so and we'll touch on that just a little bit, not that specifically, but in general, a little bit more advanced than, you know, just networking. How do you get someone to be your mentor? I mean, do you just say, hey, I need a mentor? Is that the subject line in an email? Or, you know, how does that sort of relationship develop?
You kind of have to, well, I mean, you reach out to them, you get start a conversation. I don't think it would be good to jump right off the bat and say, I need a mentor. Will you be it? But if you write an email and you see that this person writes back to you and there's some common interests, continue the communications and, you know, it just you just fall into it. But if you don't want to do that, you should join one of those organizations that have a mentor-mentee program. Mm-hmm. The MAA will have one. I know Young ICA has one, and I believe HK45.
Arbitral Women.
Arbitral Women. You don't... Oh, I think... Do you have to be a woman to join it?
I actually don't know.
I'm in it, and Louise Barrington and Mirez Felipe, who started it, are great, but I think you have to be a woman to be in it, which is great, because there's also an Arbitral Men's Club, just in a different name.
Well, sure, I would not deny that.
Somewhere in the UK, I can't remember the name, but they go...
Oh, you mean like actually there is
an actual...
Oh, yeah. I had no idea. No.
I'm pretty sure they don't call it Arbitral Men or emphasize that it's all males, but you know, it exists.
Yeah, that'd be a weird group. Yeah. But interesting. Well, weird maybe is too strong, but just interesting. Interesting. Okay. So we're wrapping up here. Sherlyn, it is somehow, let's say 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock p.m. on a Friday. You don't somehow all of the clients have said, we won't contact you for the weekend.
Yes.
You know, outstanding work to do. How is Sherlyn Tung spending her weekend?
She's going to start with some sleep. But then if she can, she's going to go travel. She's going to go to a nearby country and just enjoy the weekend.
Where are you wanting to travel? What's on your hit list?
So I would love to still... I haven't gone to Cambodia, northern Vietnam. And I actually want to go back to Saigon, which is in the south. I love Thailand. Thailand's never a bad choice. I've always wanted to go to the Maldives, but people keep telling me there's really nothing to do.
Okay. I mean, I'm sure they're doing something down there. But
I would just like to sit there, relax, and look at the beauty. It's going to disappear one day.
Well, yeah, unfortunately, due to global warming and climate change. But this must be a happy topic. You know, what are you doing?
Happy topic. Well, traveling's great. I mean, Living in Hong Kong is perfect because you are 1 to 2 hours away from so many different destinations. I mean, I go see my dad up in China every month now. I'm an hour away from Taiwan, which is where I was born and where I grew up. Or let me rephrase that. Grew up for a few years before I moved. But it's just so easy. You can go away on a Friday night and come back Sunday night and be refreshed.
So how often do you have to do you use your Mandarin speaking skills?
Every day. I mean, in Hong Kong, they speak Cantonese, but they are getting better in Mandarin now. And I think they prefer to speak Mandarin over English.
Over English, sure. Yeah, no one wants to speak English.
Nobody wants to speak English.
Now, how important is language skills for younger practitioners or people that are trying to break in? Are they important?
They're important. I mean, to be honest, I'm not saying if you don't speak more than one language, you won't get another job. But it does, it gives your expertise or your abilities a really huge jump, particularly Mandarin. Mandarin is a very good language. Spanish is quite a good language to have in arbitration.
Sí.
Yeah. Habla español?
Sí, hablo poquito español.
That's very good. See, I start mixing up my Spanish and my German these days.
What?
Yeah, I just think first foreign language, oh, it's Spanish for German.
But
it's really good.
So you would say investing in language skills is something that, if nothing else, you can start working on that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I know one of my favorite and most intelligent arbitrators speaks 9 languages.
9 languages, fluently.
And fluently.
Wow.
And I'm not going to name this person because I don't know if... This person would want me to name him, but he's one of the smartest ones out there. And I know that he gets a lot of different cases because he can speak the different languages.
Well, sure. I bet that'd be a skill to be able to work specifically in all those different languages. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah. Again, if you don't speak more than one language, it doesn't mean you won't get anywhere.
I'll ask a follow up there. Do you think it's important enough that you maybe even suspend your practice for a certain amount of time to study the language? Or do you think it's kind of the sort of thing you learn a little bit here, learn a little bit there, and then eventually you get there?
It kind of depends on the person. So for me, I think if I were to quit what I do and take a full immersion language course, I actually think it would be detrimental to my learning because I learn based on using.
Sure.
So my German has improved significantly because I lived in Vienna and I use it all the time. And same thing with my Mandarin. My Mandarin, I now can speak modern Chinese versus my mother and father taught me Mandarin Chinese.
Yeah, like, you know, colloquial, very, you know,
old-fashioned is what they tell me.
Old-fashioned Mandarin.
In China.
You fit right in the Xi'an.
Exactly.
Well, fair enough. Well, Sherlyn, we're going to wrap up this episode here. Do you have any shout-outs you want to give before we wrap?
Hello to my wonderful husband, Ulrich Schroeder. is my lifeline and backbone in life. I think that's probably the shout out I'd like.
Well, great. Well, thank you, Sherilyn, for stopping by. We'll definitely have to have you come back for another episode sometime.
Yay, thank you.
Appreciate you coming through and being part of this first season of Tales of the Tribunal. And we'll see you another time.
All right. Have a good day.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
So that was my interview with Sherilyn Tung. I hope you enjoyed our conversation as much as I did. Again, lots of great nuggets of wisdom and information to be found in the interview. I hope that you would now, if you are a Moody or a member of the Vis Moods or have been involved in years past, that you are now inspired to go out and register. We'll include a link to the MAA and to the Vis website on our show notes. Along with that, we'll of course include links to the various topics that we talked about, from Sherilyn's books and movies that she's into, to the mentoring organizations that she talked about and young organizations that it's recommended that you join. Beyond that, so I will be here in London until June 26th. This is being taken in 2019. So if you're listening at some point in the future, I am probably not in London if you're listening now, but I will be there until June 26th. And then, as mentioned at the show's outset, I will be in Zurich until the 30th. And there's still time to register for the AIJA conference going on there. So I will include a link to that as well in the show notes. Beyond that, one more thing I'd like to plug before we get out of here is the free, I must repeat, free ABA webinar on July 11th on the magic words, language translation and litigation or arbitration. And what that free webinar and CLE will take place, will cover, is topics that relate to translation and international litigation, advocacy, and arbitration. And of course, being international practitioners, that is a topic that comes up all too often, but really is not covered much in depth. So what we hope to do during this hour and a half webinar is cover some various topics therein that you'll hear from experts in the field in a very practical sense on how you deal with things like expert, correct expert translation, how you deal with simultaneous translation, or how you make an effective presentation to neutrals, whether that be to the court, whether that be to a tribunal panel. So I, along with Ms. Cheyenne Bao from Hong Kong, Mr. Duarte Henriquez from BCH in Lisbon, Nicholas Pikowitz from Graf & Pikowitz in Austria, and then my fellow Southerner John Branson from Womblebond and Dickinson, we will all be working on that panel. I'll be moderating that their fantastic conversation and discussion. We look forward to having you. It is July 11th from 1 p.m. Eastern to 2:30 p.m. Eastern. Now you would say, Chris, July 11th, isn't there something else going on July 11th? Yes, there are a few other things, but we will get to those later. That's right. I'm leaving you on a cliffhanger, dear listener. In any case, let me stop being over the top. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If you want to get in touch, leave some comments or anything of the sort, reach out to me at talesofthetribunal@gmail.com. Again, that's talesofthetribunal@gmail.com. Otherwise, I look forward to hearing from you on the social medias. Use the hashtag TOT or Tales of the Tribunal. And that is it for this week's episode. If you really enjoyed this episode, enjoyed the show thus far, I hope that you'll leave a comment and review on any of the platforms which we can be found. That's Spotify, Google Play, Apple iTunes, or Podbean.com. Thank you all for your support, and I'll see you next week.